Saint Celestine V, baptismal name was Peter. The year of his birth seems to have been 1210. His parents, Mary and Angelarius, both virtuous, were poor and of humble station. They had 12 children, of whom Peter was the 11th, and they had always prayed that at least one of their children might be a true servant of God. To his mother's joy, for his father had died when Peter was very young indeed, her 11th child soon began to show signs of his future sanctity. At the early age of 5, he was already fond of the Bible and holy books. His attachment to books, however, was not viewed with favor by his brothers. Besides their father, 6 of their brothers and sisters were already dead. The family was poor and could not afford, they urged, to have one of its numbers brought up in idleness. Moreover, they reminded their mother that a rich man had taken a fancy to Peter and had promised to make him his heir. But she, recalling to mind that the boy had been born with a call, preserved in determination to bring him up for the service of God, the more so that her husband had expressed the same wish before his death. The boy corresponded with her desires, and by the time he was 12, he knew the Psalms by heart. But about this time his mother was much troubled by seeing him, still a beardless youth, feeding a flock of snow-white sheep. She recovered her serenity, however, when she reflected that it was a question of the flock of Christ. Daily Peter grew in goodness, so that his disciples assure us that, even in his youth, he was old in virtue. Peter felt drawn to a hermit's life. He was, however, deterred at first from carrying out this project, because, even at home, when alone, he feared the phantoms of the night. He did not realize that one might be a hermit in a cave and still have a companion. But when he was about 20, in 1230, he persuaded a companion to leave home with him and seek the real sweet things of life in solitude. They agreed to go first to Mother Rome to get a sanction for their proposed mode of life, but after a day's journey, his companion returned home, and Peter had to go on alone. Hearing that there was a hermit near Castel de Sangro, he went to consult him, but enlightened from above, he left him, and timid though he was, passed the night in the open. Comforted and encouraged by heavenly visions, he thenceforth lost all fear of darkness, and dug out for himself a cave beneath a great rock, but so small was it that, though he was not tall, he could not stand upright, nor lie down at full length within it. Here, clad in a rough tunic, he remained for 3 years, with no companions but snakes, toads, and lizards. Often was the young hermit here tempted by evil spirits, and often, too, did he receive great graces. Peter's sanctity spread abroad, and the many who came to visit him urged him to get ordained a priest. He accordingly went to Rome, and, returning a priest, took up his abode in a cave on Mount Morone, where now stands the church of Saint Spirito. The chronology of the life of Peter previous to his election as Pope is obscure, and it is not possible to say exactly in what year he was ordained or in what year he became a monk. With regard to that latter event, we know at least that it took place before the year of 1251, and we know further that he was received into the Benedictine order and the abbey of Our Lady of Fassoles. Finding that his solitude, which he loved so much, was too much disturbed on Mount Morone, as it was comparatively near a town, Peter retired to the still more inaccessible range of Magella. He was certainly there by the year 1256. Even here men followed him, and a number of them put themselves under his direction. The Celestine congregation was born. With some strict interpretation, Celestine the saint placed his followers under the rule of Saint Benedict, which he had himself embraced, for, say his biographers, It was the will of God that this rule, which many had trampled in the mud, should be brought to light by these his new servants. As the number of disciples increased rapidly, Brother Peter had to seek out suitable places in which they could live, and when they were established in their new homes, he used to visit them frequently, in order, we are told, to strengthen their weaknesses and to encourage them to bear their poverty by his words and example. These indeed were the two things that had drawn attraction of Brother Peter, them to him: the sight of his austere life and the irresistible sweetness of his words and manner. His disciples tell us at length of his love of prayer, how he spent much of the night as well as the day praying, how the devotion with which he said Mass inflamed the piety of the bystanders, and how he recited the divine office on his knees with the greatest fervor. His austerities were rigorous. He brought his body into subjection by hair shirts, knotted leathern girdles, and even iron chains. When his exhausted frame could no longer stand or kneel, he lay down on boards in a cramped position, with a stone or a block of wood for a pillow, and in the bitter winter on an exposed mountain with coverings utterly insufficient to keep out the cold. At no time did he eat more than was barely enough to support life. Often the bread that he ate was so stale and hard that it had to be broken with a hammer, and during the 4 or 6 Lents which he kept every year, he often ate only twice a week, and then took nothing but bread and water. Sometimes he even went without bread, and took only but some raw vegetables and apples. On Sundays and festivals, he and his disciples partook of cooked vegetables flavored with poor oil, but, as far as he himself was concerned, he generally ate the vegetables without any kind of flavoring. When not occupied in prayer, he was always engaged in reading or in some kind of manual work. He was never idle. If he was not engaged with visitors, he was either reading the Bible or some pious book, or copying or binding books, or making or mending his own poor coarse clothing, or that of the brethren. He knew that idleness was the source of all evil. Except during his Lents, his time was very largely taken up in receiving people who came to see him from all parts. All sorts and conditions of men flocked to him. The fame of his goodness and sanctity, of his miraculous powers, and of his engaging manners drew both men and women to him in the hope of getting health of body or consolation for their stricken spirits. Not only did kings and nobles come to consult him, but even clerics, and what is the greatest miracle of all, many men of evil life were converted as soon as they came into contact with him. In fact, we are assured that no matter how dissolute some of those who visited him might be, they all left better men.